This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My name is Lindsay Ellis.
Oh, I don't identify as anything right now.
I used to say video essayist because YouTuber is such a dirty word, but it's also more honest.
Lindsay Ellis was pretty early to YouTube. She started posting videos in 2008 when she was a film student. And her videos are a form of pop culture criticism, commentary on everything from Marvel movies to Broadway musicals.
But anyway, not every musical, even the ones with explicit revolutionary text, needs to be trying to tear down the system. But what would a revolution look like if it had been included
in her online world, and it's a pretty big world, Ellis was a celebrity, and she had more than 1 million followers on YouTube. Then suddenly, last year, in a moment of real uproar and emotion, Ellis walked away from the career that she'd spent more than a decade building.
And it's just so, like, it's just such a nightmare. And I'm just like, this nightmare is never going to end. Like, I'm leaving. I quit. I give up. You won.
Lindsay Ellis had been, to use the term of the moment, canceled. You know what I'm talking about. The idea that people are somehow waiting to punish anyone who says something that's deemed offensive or mistaken, justified or not. And social media, in its chaotic way, is the judge and jury. The refrain, if you can't say anything these days, has become very, very common, and particularly on the right. It's an essential slogan of cultural politics.
Are we going to tear the Washington Monument down? Are we going to rename it the obelisk of wokeness?
I'd say that among the crises facing our country, the pandemic, income inequality, the attack on voting rights, structural racism, conflict with Russia and China, cancel culture is not the most dire among them. But to look away entirely from this clash on speech, over accusation and forgiveness, over social media itself as the public square, well, to ignore it all is to ignore a critical arena of public life. So what's at stake? What is cancel culture? Is it real and ruinous, or is it overstated and distorted? Is it a cudgel, or is it a mirage? These are some of the questions we're going to try to tackle today. It's our entire episode of the New Yorker Radio Hour. So back to Lindsay Ellis, the YouTuber. The events that made Ellis walk away start with a Disney movie, Raya and the Last Dragon, which came out last year.
Raya and the Last Dragon is this movie which is, I guess, at least aesthetically based on South Asian cultures.
Kumandra. This is what we used to be, when our land was whole and we lived harmoniously alongside dragons.
And I was thinking about how much it reminded me of most of the YA fantasy books I had read in the last couple years. And, like, these authors are very unapologetically inspired by Avatar The Last Airbender, which is a cartoon from the mid-2000s.
Both of those things, the new movie and the old TV show, were influenced to some degree by Asian styles of animation and storytelling. And one night, she tweeted this.
Also, watched Raya and the Last Dragon, and I think we need to come up with a name for this genre that is basically Avatar The Last Airbender reduxes. It's like half of all YA fantasy published in the last few years anyway.
By the next morning, that tweet had gotten a lot of attention.
And people were like, you know, you need to address this. This is really racist. And I'm just very confused. And I asked one of them, I was like, explain your rationale. And they were like, well, it kind of implies that all Asian-inspired properties are the same.
Lindsay says she only meant to make a comment about genre. But some people online felt that in comparing Raya to Avatar, she was somehow pigeonholing them based on their Asian influence.
I kind of just let it go for a few hours, but it just kind of kept building and building. And I think, honestly, the worst part was, like, my friends were just not on board with me. They were like, well, you're just not getting it. You're just, this is just a racial blind spot for you. And, well, basically, I kind of got defensive, and that made it worse.
Honestly, her follow-up thread somehow made me even angrier. Please check your quote retweets, Lindsay. Asian folks have been explaining their rationality.
Lindsay Ellis is trying so hard to double down on her racist comment, making her response...
I've hated Lindsay Ellis for years. She's horrifically problematic. Weird how Lindsay Ellis and her friends keep getting called out for racism, yet every time it's cancel culture's fault.
So I guess we have to be mindful of the fact that this was only a couple weeks after the spa shootings in Atlanta, and the conversation about what anti-Asian racism looks like and how bad it is in the U.S. was kind of ramping up. And so people were really sensitive about this movie. Then people started dragging up every remotely problematic thing I had ever said or done over a period of 13 years. Tried to unplug, but I just... could not stop thinking about it. Like, I was just so angry, you know? And I forget, like, where I just decided. I was like, I'm going to address this.
In April, she posted a video called Mask Off to YouTube. And it addressed the allegations that were being made about her.
We all make mistakes. So where I feel like an amendment or an apology is warranted, I will do so. But where I feel...
It's more than 100 minutes long.
Next. 2018, Transphobia via Tarzan. I genuinely, honestly, really do regret this one, and I have said so a few times. Why do they never screen cap the retractions? Weird. When it was announced that LeFou would become the first...
None of those apologies were accepted.
This was painful to watch.
This was...
I actually would not have watched this if we didn't have a podcast.
No, yes, I would have fully not watched this if I didn't have to, now talk about it for an hour.
But you know what? That's what we're gonna do.
I feel like it was honestly a mistake. And I think it made a lot of my colleagues uncomfortable. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of them just stopped talking to me.
On December 28th, Ellis posted a letter saying that she was walking away. And she hoped that this would put an end to the entire affair.
And then it just started all over again. The whole cycle, just the dragging, the thrill of humiliation, saying that, you know, how weak and pathetic I was, that I was like throwing my million subs away because I couldn't take a little heat on Twitter.
I spoke with Lindsay Ellis a few weeks after all this happened. Now, Lindsay, you're suggesting, I think, that some people are insincere in their hatred and they derive some form of pleasure or entertainment from their performance of outrage.
Well, yeah, and because it is personal. Like, you know, basically I have these Twitter follows that were these people that were just screen capping everything you say with the intent of bad faith reading, because it is fun to take people down that you perceive as having power. And I know that like 1.2 million subs seems like a lot, but like on YouTube, it's really not. I think I'm like number 25,000.
But a million too, I hate to tell you, but the subscription base of the New Yorker magazine is 1.2 million exactly. And,
oh, wow.
And maybe several people, God willing, read that. I mean, but you're making a living from being on YouTube?
Not YouTube. Most of my money comes from Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And sponsorships. YouTube is more just like a platform to deliver content than it is an actual generator of money.
I ask you this about the economics of it because something's got to be worth it about this. In other words, you've been a target for harassment from the right before. You're not new to this, and now you're getting and it seems quite upsetting, a hell of a lot of criticism and abuse from the left, as you see it. Why do it?
It was not a healthy way to live. Mm. It was I think some people, you know, they don't live in constant fear, but if you are filtering everything you say through the potential for the worst bad faith interpretation, you can't create, you can't write, you can't do anything. So that was why I was just like, I'm done. I don't have anything left to say.
And when you say fear, were you receiving threats?
No.
Incredible threats?
No, it wasn't threats. I think that's what's hard to get people understand is it's not threats, it's ostracism, it's shame. There's a sort of dampening effect where if your name is so toxic, nobody wants to associate with you. So it's just so humiliating.
On a very large scale, we've seen performers, artists, authors, others who have gone through these passages. Think what you will about what they said and who they are. But Dave Chappelle, say, J.K. Rowling. Chappelle's not going to stop making comedy. Rowling will continue writing novels.
Well, here's the thing about those two, and that's why mm-hmm. I feel like it's a really bad comparison. Mm-hmm. They are incendiary. They know what they're doing. J.K. Rowling wrote a, 2,000-word manifesto about why she opposes Scotland's gender identification law. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle has made two Netflix specials that are basically just fueled by his ire that trans people criticize his jokes. And both of them have very effectively weaponized the broad public sympathy for this idea of victims of cancel culture. Comparing both of them and me, who's just been in flailing damage control for the last year over a misread of something so nothing, something so small and insignificant.
Lindsay, let me ask you what can only be a tough question, but I have to ask it. How do you respond to those who would say, look, all this is, Twitter, social media in general, is speech, free speech, more speech. And if you want to enter into the public forum as a YouTuber or writing for a magazine or mm-hmm. or whatever it is, and you can't take criticism, however abusive, however nasty, then maybe you shouldn't be in the public forum. How do you respond to that? And if what is to be
quit.
Done about it?
I don't know. That's what I said. I'd be yeah, you're right. I quit. I can't take it.